Well, actress and often Trump basher Alyssa Milano has said it's time for truce. It's time to heal the nation. How should we respond?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So can we all just get along now? Kumbaya, volatile election season, certain things still being worked out. Either way, come January, half America is going to be very upset with the other half. Can we just heal, come together, get along? How do we respond when someone who's been on the other side ideologically puts out an olive branch? Well, we'll talk about that today and a whole lot more. Michael Brown, welcome to the broadcast. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-3487-8884. Now, I'm going to open the phones for any subject under the sun, but I'd love to hear from those who have a response for some of the issues that we'll be talking about directly. Allow me to go back about 12 years. When I first went on daily talk radio, I was really praying about how much I would talk about politics, the culture, etc. I knew that I had a burden for revival in the church and discipling of believers and apologetics. I mean, obviously, it's been in my heart for many, many years. I knew God had burdened me about the culture, about the gospel impacting culture, about the rise of LGBTQ activism and things like that. But what was new territory was the issue of politics, because over the years, I've written very, very little about politics. I'm talking about up until 2008 when I went on live daily radio. Talked very, very little about politics. And just, you know, read all the books I wrote up to that point, hardly ever talking about these issues. So I was working this through, trying to get God's mind as a talk show host. So obviously the subjects came up more, especially during election times. But those who listened, those who were regular listeners during the 8 years of the presidency of Barack Obama, you know I was not an Obama basher. I deeply differed with many of his policies. I took strong issue with some of the things that he said. I believed in many ways the decisions he was making were negative and destructive for our country. My public statement was always, I'm praying that he will be the greatest president we've ever had, but I don't see that now and I have concerns. But all of you who listen regularly, you know that I was not bashing him on a regular basis. When certain things happened that I felt needed discussion, I would raise them. And if he did something that I thought was really praiseworthy, I would express that. But this was not just a right-wing conservative show. And if you read my articles over those years as I began to write more and more op-ed pieces, I don't know, somewhere around 2000, around that same time I started writing more op-ed pieces, then you also know that I didn't write constantly attacking Barack Obama. Where things touched on the areas of burden and concern to me, my calling as a minister of the gospel called to address cultural issues, where they touched on that, say, having to do with abortion or having to do with the meaning of marriage or having to do with racial conflict, then I would talk about those things. But otherwise, I was not, no, Obama this, Obama that, Obama this, Obama that. You know that, okay? Then, during the 4 years with Trump's presidency, you know that as much as I have strongly supported many of his policies, I have been proclaiming the whole time he's not our savior. And I've always said I have differences with other aspects of what he's doing. And I believe in the midst of the good, there's collateral damage. So I have not just been a right-wing Trump supporter or a right-wing Obama basher, all right? In the same way, if you were used to listening to MSNBC or CNN or one of those, you'd know that they were constantly left-wing praising Obama, constantly left-wing attacking Trump, all right? So, obviously, my position here, let's just say that Joe Biden is the next president, as in the natural, overwhelmingly going that direction, doesn't mean there's not fraud, doesn't mean it won't be exposed, doesn't mean there won't be a radical change and Trump won't get four more years. I mean, we shall see. My policy has been, let's wait for the final verdict, and then we go forward. Let the courts, let the Electoral College vote, then we go forward, all right? But I am not going to be here every, oh, Biden's cabinet picked, oh, Biden this, oh, Biden that. That's not what I'm called to do, all right? When something intersects with areas that are of concern to me, maybe a Middle East policy and something having to do with Israel, maybe a cabinet pick that's going to directly touch on issues of meaning of marriage, sexuality, and how that affects our kids and our schools, then I'll talk about those things. But if you're looking for a version of a Christian version, say, of, you know, Rush Limbaugh doing the same thing but quoting the Bible also, or Sean Hannity doing the same thing quoting the Bible also, that's not me. That's not my calling. I'm not saying that in a negative way about these men with far bigger audiences than me. I'm simply saying that's not why I'm here, okay? And in the same way, for those who think that my goal is to defend Trump, my goal is to lift up Jesus. And where I feel Trump is unfairly attacked, I'll say so. And when I feel he's done good, I'll appreciate it. But always with a caveat because of the damage that comes with the good that he does. So I want to say this again, as I've said many a time. I'm not here to cater to a side. I'm not here to get my white evangelical friends saying, all right, Mike Brown, you're really doing it. Dr. Brown, you are our man to back Trump. Or I'm not trying to reach out to my black evangelical friends, say, hey, look at how balanced I am and look at how open I am to other positions. No, I'm trying to honor the Lord, and by honoring the Lord, serve all of you the best I can. So here and there, you'll get uncomfortable with me. That's life, right? Here and there, you get mad at me. But just ask yourself, am I doing my best before the Lord to speak the truth and to speak the truth in love? And am I doing my best ultimately to get us worshiping God and putting our hope in God? Because the political system is flawed. And politicians are flawed. And presidents are flawed. And human beings are flawed. So my trust is in the gospel, working through God's people. And even then, my trust is not in God's people, but in God. So we're part of this system here. We work within it, right? But we have a different set of priorities. We have a different approach. And we know ultimately what matters most is what is going to matter in eternity. And the biggest issues are, what can we do to see justice and righteousness in our generation, to save as many lives as possible, to have God's blessing on our nation, and to have an environment in which we have the best chance of fulfilling the Great Commission, being disciples and making disciples without a government standing in our way. Those are our great, great goals. And I know so many of you, once we get past the conflicts and the misunderstandings and the people reacting a little too quickly, or maybe I didn't express myself clearly enough, once we get past that, really we do share the same heart. On the big, big issues, we do share the same heart. But if you're waiting, okay, well, you know, what are all your comments on the Biden cabinet picks? It's just not my focus. There are plenty of other people doing great analysis on it. That's not my focus. That's not what God's laid on my heart. I'm going to be faithful to that. And I think that's why you're listening, and that's why you're watching, and that's why you're reading our material, because you know what we are bringing to you. Not better than anybody else, but specific to our calling. Fair enough? All right. I was sent this little video. If you're listening, what you will hear is somebody playing bongos and kind of singing this little funny-sounding song. If you're watching, you'll see that the head on the person playing bongos is Joe Biden's head. And then there's a Donald Trump making some of the moves he makes, like the rallies, the thumbs up, and the, you know, the acknowledgments and so on. And he's dancing. But I want you to hear this. I want you to see this. And then I'll tell you why. Fade that out. There's a little cat head bopping in the front. You say, well, why in the world show that? Well, it reminded me in seeing it that it would really be great if we weren't attacking each other the way we were. Oh, please hear me. I understand there are deep divides and there are deep issues. I understand that. I'm not minimizing it. But we have really been a nation divided. We have been deeply divided. I've said many times I get people on all sides angry with me for saying this, but I believe the presidency of Barack Obama was terribly divisive at a time when he could have been a unifier, because it was such a breakthrough for us to have a black family in the White House and a black man as president, and I felt it was such a significant moment in our history. I couldn't vote for him because of policies, but I thought, what a great moment in our country. And the largest single voting block, just because of numerics, would have been white voters that voted for him. And yet I found his style, identity politics, and other things to be very divisive, even worse now that he's not president. And then Donald Trump comes, a tremendously divisive man, and deepens divisions and throws salt in those wounds. Now I got everybody mad at me for saying that. But, you know, we're getting torn apart. And now the nature of Trump, the degree to which you love him or you hate him, I mean, the polarizing, the loyalty towards him and the despising of him, the degree that those things are so intense, you got families torn apart. You have families for Thanksgiving saying, okay, we don't say a word about politics, or we don't mention the word Trump because the sentiments are so intense on either side. You can't mention the election. It's legit. No, it's stolen. We are so divided and so torn up. You think, yeah, wouldn't it just be nice if the national leaders just said, hey, we know there are deep divisions, but we need each other as fellow Americans. And ultimately, if we keep attacking each other, we're going to destroy each other. You know, a house divided can't stand. Jesus said it. It remains true. And yet we've got these deep differences. And yet we've got these fundamental ideological concerns. It'd be like in the days of slavery for the North and South to say, well, let's just come together and be friends while slavery still exists. I mean, how do we do these things? And yet somehow in the body we have to model this. Somehow, it's my plea, it's my appeal. In the midst of our political and sociological and ideological differences, if we truly know Jesus, somehow we have to unite around him and find common ground in him and then share that with a nation that is breaking apart at the seams. When we come back, I'm going to talk practically, and I'll give you my response to Alyssa Milano and her olive branch. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, here's the deal. Here's the deal. I have this crack team that works with me every day. Two young men who are with me every day doing our video radio feeds, part of our larger ministry team here. And they are both drummers. One of them actually graduated from music school with a degree in music, both drummers, percussionists. That makes all three of us, all right? So this is what I have to live with. This is what you get when you get percussionists as your video audio guys. They just wanted me to know. They couldn't hold it back. They had to tell me those were not bongos. It was a darbuka. Whoever heard of a darbuka? Now, also known as a goblet drum. But for those who are watching, some of you were watching and other percussionists, you're like, Dr. Brown, I can't trust you anymore. For years I trusted you. For years I looked to you. And I watched and I hung on your every word. But you said bongos and those were not bongos. So I can't trust you anymore. Okay, so I have restored trust here. That's what our team is for. These are the people that watch my back, all right? And these are, there we go. These are the guys that help me do what I do. Yeah. Well, I can handle the Bible stuff, the theology stuff, the apologetic stuff, and all the arrows, they're going to hit me. I'm the guy on the front lines. But dare I say one word about a musical instrument, these boys, will have my back. So I'm grateful. All right, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I saw an article last night, and it was about Alyssa Milano. I'm not familiar with her acting career, but she's obviously a well-known actor or actress, as we used to say. And she very strongly spoke out against Donald Trump over the years, very strongly spoke out on issues concerning abortion. And it was interesting that she basically extended an olive branch now, that she has reached out, in her mind, assuming that Biden is now the victor, so we're going to have a Biden-Harris administration. She's on Jimmy Kimmel. And this is in the past, some of her Trump mockery. So before we talk about the statement that she did make and the olive branch, let me just take you back and give you just a little hint of some of the mockery of Trump. This is not really bad or harsh, but, you know, she was an outspoken, as many celebrities were, an outspoken Trump opponent. So let's listen to what she said.
History has been made since Donald J. Trump was sworn in as the 45th president of the United States. And now you can own a piece of it, with great moments in Trump history commemorative plates.
I'm Alyssa Milano. You will be the envy of family and friends thanks to these priceless works of art highlighting all of our president's most unforgettable moments. Relive all the glory. When our president triumphantly ascends the stairs of Air Force One with toilet paper on his shoe. Trump and Vladimir Putin's first kiss. Feel the president looking directly at the sun during a solar eclipse. And everyone's favorite, our president proudly posing with hundreds of hamburgers. These masterpieces are crafted of fine endangered African elephant tusk and richly accented with the same 22-karat gold trim used on the president's commode. But, like members of the Trump administration, this offer won't last. Make these incredible keepsakes yours for 7 easy payments of only $29.98. If you call in the next 4 seconds, you'll receive the Sean Spicer Pizza Slicer absolutely free. Do the right thing. Pick up a jitterbug phone and call now.
All right, so obviously tongue-in-cheek and got these different commemorative plates, but she was an outspoken critic of the president. And as you'll see in a moment, said some very harsh things. I mean, didn't show a decapitated head or things like that, all right? So this is what she tweets out. She says this: I'd like to extend an olive branch to Trump supporters. I'm ready to move forward together. So hashtag forward together. There's so much work to do to heal the nation. Let's be a part of the solution and not add to the problems we face. My comments are open. Please reply with hashtag forward together. And then she's got a heart of love. So she's getting thousands of replies. Many are saying, thanks, but no, no way. Oh, you're going to bash us and attack, and now you think you've got the victory. You want to come together. Okay, yeah, no thanks. Others are saying, no thanks. We don't want to make peace with these people, these hateful, bigoted people. So there's negative response on both sides, and then some weighing in positively. So I thought, let me respond. Now, just because she's getting thousands of comments, I'm assuming she's not going to see my comment. So I did it for others that would see. Perhaps she will. Perhaps she will. But my assumption is, with thousands of comments, she doesn't know me from Adam, she's not going to see my comment. But this is how I responded, trying to be constructive, all right? By all means, let's seek to heal the nation. Hashtag forward together, exclamation point. In other words, the word says, blessed are the peacemakers. They're the children of God. The word teaches us as much as it lies with us, try to live peaceably with others and so on. So what can I do to bring healing? All right. We've got massive divisions. We have massive conflicts in our ideology and worldview and what's important to us. But you extend an olive branch. I accept it. So that leads me then to 3 questions to probe the sincerity of the appeal. In other words, I always want to believe the best. I always want to take people at their word. Unless I have clear evidence to the contrary, or God makes clear you can't trust this person, I want to do my best to believe the best and take people at their word. All right? can be naive at times, but that's what I seek to do. So I posed these three questions for Alyssa Milano and for others who say, yeah, let's come together. One, for what past comments can you now apologize? In other words, if you really want to bring healing and you've been bashing, then for what past comments can you now apologize? All right. And let me just pause there for a moment and say this. Have you ever seen, maybe in the lead up to a big sports event, especially a fight, that the players or the combatants will trash talk and say negative things about each other, harsh things about each other? And then when the fight is over, the match is over, they're hugging. And they're saying, hey, man, I just said stuff to build the fight. I was just the emotion of the moment, man. I think you're a great guy, or I admire you, or you're a worthy opponent. And they hug and they, you know, they hold each other's hands up. And it's saying, hey, that was just words. Well, obviously, the rhetoric that's been going on these years and the attacks back and forth have been more than just words or more than trash talk for a fight. Okay. It's not like two politicians going at it to try to win an office, and maybe they're exaggerating some of their hostility towards each other. We're talking about just people on the outside expressing their views. So if you now feel, okay, I want to be an agent of healing, can I apologize for past things that I said? Can I apologize for the way I viewed others or spoke of others? For example, if it was Hillary Clinton who had referred to so many of the Trump supporters as a basket of deplorables, if she said, look, let's bring healing to the nation, regardless of who the next president is, let's bring healing to the nation. And I am truly sorry for describing you like that. I was judgmental. It was degrading. I maybe took a few extreme cases and made them the norm. Forgive me for that. Or think of all the things Donald Trump would, you know, get up and say, all the lock her up stuff and chanting that and crooked Hillary. And I apologize for that. And I went too far. And so that's my first question for Alyssa Milano, is what past comments can you now apologize for? If it's, hey, I stand by everything I said, it's hard then to have any type of constructive dialogue, right? And then this was my second question. My second question was this. Can you have a civil conversation with pro-life Christians? In other words, are we able to even sit at the same table? And you explain why you believe that abortion was the right decision in your life and good for your career and even in harmony with the Bible, right? And then you're going to sit across the table from a committed pro-lifer who believes that the slaughter of the unborn is just that. Can you have a civil conversation? Will you give that person your ear? If that person says, hey, I want to hear your perspective, I want to know your own life story, why you made the decisions you made, but will you let us bring our perspective to you? If there's going to be real dialogue, then it has to go in those directions. And we as pro-lifers have to be willing to sit with someone without saying, I'm not going to sit with a baby killer. Okay, sit. All of you had abortions in the past and know the struggles you went through and the questions and the pain and so on, realize you need more compassion than that. All right, so that's my second question. And then the third question was this. Would you have accepted an olive branch from Trump supporters in November of 2016? Oh, yeah, you understand the force of that. In other words, you think, okay, we got rid of Trump, the evil Trump, bad, you know, orange man Trump. We got rid of him. We got our guy in, Biden, and maybe after him, you know, our lady, you know, Kamala Harris. And so we're the victors now. So, okay, now we want to make peace. What if, after the Trump victory in 2016, Trump supporters, Trump voters said, hey, Alyssa, no hard feelings. We got to heal the nation. We are so torn up after these primaries and after these elections. Let's heal the nation. Would you accept it, an olive branch? Then that would show the sincerity of your own feelings. So what are you going to do when it's your neighbor, when it's your friend, not some celebrity like Alyssa Milano? How are we going to respond? Can we respond with righteousness and yet with the spirit of grace so that we can at least sit down at the same table and talk?
fire we want, for fire we please.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on the Line of Fire. Listen, I deeply understand that there are significant issues that divide us right now as Americans. And we cannot gloss over those. We dare not gloss over those. To do so is to do what the false prophets did in ancient Israel. As Jeremiah says in 6:14 and 8:11, they superficially treat the fracture of my people, saying, all is well, shalom, shalom, when nothing is well, peace, peace, when there is no peace. The last thing I'm saying is gloss over differences, or just make believe we sing kumbaya and walk on happily ever after together. But I am saying that we are fellow Americans, that we are ultimately fellow descendants of Adam, that we are all in need of a Savior, that none of us are perfectly righteous, that Jesus is our only hope, and that we can do our best to reach out to people we differ with. At the very least, we can have better understanding of our differences and not demonize each other the way that we do. And perhaps we can be a positive influence. Wouldn't it be good also if that person that thought you were a crazed religious fanatic came to know that you're actually a very decent human being and a devoted spouse or parent or fine young person? Wouldn't it be good to get past the caricatures so that we could love our neighbors ourselves? And let me ask you, does the Bible say love your neighbor as yourself as long as your neighbor agrees with you? Does the Bible say love your neighbor as yourself as long as you go to the same church? Love your neighbor as yourself as long as you vote for the same political party? No. Love your neighbor as yourself. When Jesus died for us, he died for us as sinners and rebels. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us, Romans 5. We want to show that same love to a world that does not know Jesus while we hold to our views, while we keep to our convictions. Well, we don't compromise. We have, as I've said often, hearts of compassion, backbones of steel. Let's model that. The Jesus way is not to be smashing and smiting each other day and night. The Jesus way is not to be insulting and degrading each other day and night. The Jesus way has the courage to stand for principle even at the cost of our lives. But the Jesus way also is lay your life down for those who do not know the Lord. 866 34-TRUTH. Let's go to Bob in Woodbine, Maryland. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Good afternoon, Dr. Brown. I've listened to your program and talking about how it seemed like the church maybe was a little too invested in a man. For myself, I have been doing some heart searching about why I should be as emotionally affected by the election as I have been, and something occurred to me that I wanted to ask you. If you asked me months ago what I thought of dominion theology, I would have said that I heartily rejected it, but I'm wondering if maybe we started to get a taste of a sense that we were achieving something through political power for the kingdom of God, and maybe started to unconsciously act like we believed in dominion.
Mm. Bob, that's an excellent question. I want to step back and look at a larger issue and then specifically address your question. First, I love the fact that you've been doing soul searching, examining your heart, asking questions. I've done that for years, and Nancy's always probing, asking me deep and serious questions. We have to do that. Otherwise, we're just going to perpetuate who we are without growing, without ever being uncomfortable and being forced to seek the Lord more earnestly. And I know many would simply say, look, it's one thing if Trump lost legitimately, but we are so convinced that there was an outrageous fraud being perpetrated. The idea that this could happen in America at this time with the stakes being so high is terribly upsetting. So those who deeply believe that, and I understand the evidence that's presented for it can seem very compelling. You can understand the emotions, right? You can understand the outrage and the grief, and it's not right, and it's not fair. But That being said, there is a deeper emotional reaction for many, as if all their hopes were dashed if Trump doesn't make it in for four more years. And you have to say, why is that? How in the world did it happen? And that leads to your question. So Dominion theology, or Kingdom Now, as it's sometimes called, would basically say that the church will take over the world through the gospel, that as more and more people come to faith, the church will have a more preeminent role in society and therefore will become dominant in the government, dominant in the schools, dominant in the media, dominant in entertainment, dominant in the culture as a whole, and that ultimately the whole world will become Christian before Jesus returns. Or at the least, the church will have dominion in these various areas, the so-called seven mountains, before Jesus returns, the seven mountains of culture. And that mentality then can be tremendously dangerous. It ends up departing from the preaching of the gospel and becomes more of us enforcing our will on the rest of the society, which we know through history is terribly destructive. And as a Jewish believer in Jesus myself, knowing Jewish history, that's one of the worst things for Jews when the church basically takes over the society, and because it becomes corrupt in the process. So is it possible, having a president with all of his faults and shortcomings and very unchristian aspects, is it possible that having a president who in unprecedented ways fought for evangelical causes and kept his door open to evangelicals to this moment and put solid believing Christians right near him from vice president through the cabinet and continue to meet with evangelicals and have prayer for them. And I'm sure they're speaking into his life right now in the midst of him protesting the election results. Could it be that for some of us that we got a little bit more taste of power, that we got a little bit more authority because we had a seat at the table? And now, rather than realizing that we have to change hearts through the gospel, of course, we look to fix unrighteous laws. Of course, we do that. And we fight for the rights of the marginalized and the privileged, you know, beginning with life in the womb and right up through life. Of course, we do those things. Of course, we pray for righteous justices in our courts. I mean, those are all good biblical things. But could it be that we put our trust in the system and in our power? And that now that it's like, we may not have that if, in fact, Biden is lawfully elected and we're not going to have that access and his policies may be very different and his judge is very different. And suddenly we realize, whoa, we were putting our trust in the wrong place. I think that's an excellent possibility. And worse still, sir, I think that so many of us have become obsessed with the political scene, that we have taken on more of a political spirit than a gospel spirit. And it's reflected in the way we treat each other. It's reflected on the responses on social media. It's reflected on us being more loudly Republican or Democrat than Kingdom of God people. So I think these are real issues. It's one main reason I wrote the book Evangelicals at the Crossroads, Will We Pass the Trump Test? And this is part of the Trump test to me. And thus far, I would say the majority of the church in America on both sides has not yet passed the Trump test, and somehow we've got to learn from our mistakes. So what do you think of that response to your question?
Very clear and enlightening. Yeah, that's my thought as well. Just like I said, I don't know that we would find too many people say, I've adopted that theology formally.
Right.
Subconsciously, you know, there's a taste of, well, ordinarily we would think that we have to change hearts, but it looks like we can just change society. You
know? Yeah, from the top down. And see, this is the challenge, because you thank God when you have someone that's standing for the things you believe are important, right? You thank God when there's a pushback against tyranny, against religion. You thank God when the votes go in a certain direction and there's a good policy that's set in place. You thank God for all that, and it's positive. Here, just look at the universities. They have become so godless, even antichrist in so many ways, that if we got more and more professors that were strong in their faith and setting good examples, and then more administrators and then chancellors and provosts and university presidents, that'd be wonderful. But at a certain point, it crosses over where now we're going to try to enforce that on everyone, as opposed to saying, hey, the true Christian faith is going to have an environment where there's freedom for others and freedom for dissent, freedom for different points of view. And it's a fine line. It's one that's easily crossed. And I think in many ways, because of the unique situation with Donald Trump, we failed there. But by God's grace, there's a whole lot of time to get things right. It doesn't mean that we get out of politics. It doesn't mean that we seek to have no influence. It means that we always remember the cross. We always remember servanthood. We always remember changing hearts as the ultimate goal to changing laws, changing society. Hey, Bob, thanks for the reflections and getting us started in an important conversation. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Rich in Des Moines, Iowa. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown.
You're welcome.
I was listening to you when you talked about Melissa Milano and the three questions you asked. I agree with you. What I think is kind of not funny but ironic is within their own party, let's say like Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, when they were debating for presidency, how they bashed each other so bad. I wonder if they can ask the same three questions to themselves, to each other.
Well, you know what's
really
interesting?
Chewed him out and made him look bad.
I know. You know what's interesting, Rich, is that when Kamala Harris was asked about it, like you called him a racist, you called Joe Biden a racist, her basic response was, well, it was a debate. You know, just think of it. Think of what Donald Trump did to Ted Cruz, right? He said that his father, Rafael Cruz, was involved with the assassination of JFK. He insulted Heidi Cruz's looks. I mean, oddly enough, she's attractive, but what? He insults her looks, okay? And yet, you know, they become allies and co-workers, like, well, that's politics, that's rhetoric. But that's unfortunate, though. It's unfortunate that we have a society where we can trash each other. I mean, picture if I'm just going after you like this in the ugliest ways, and you're coming back at me, it's like, that was just politics. We got to do better.
Yeah.
We got to do better as a society.
Well, about the politics, as a disabled veteran I am, I met with a congressman some years back that helped me out with my disability through the VA.
We'll tell you what, stay right there. Stay right there. We'll hear the rest of your story on the other side of the break.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire. Hey, have a blessed Thanksgiving tomorrow. Whatever you're doing, hopefully you've got some family time, but have a blessed Thanksgiving if you can in the midst of the craziness. And a little less than half hour from now, so 4:15 Eastern time, I'm going to be right back here on our YouTube channel during our exclusive weekly Q&A chat. So join me, all right? Join me for our weekly Q&A chat, Ask Dr. Brown, AskDR Brown on YouTube. That'll start at 4:15 Eastern time, just to watch, participate, ask your questions. And we've got great programming coming your way the rest of the week. Yeah, real quick, back to you, Rich, and thank you for your service to our country, sir. So go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I want to continue. We were talking about corruption within parties and amongst friends, how they can go against each other, but then when they get their way, they're the best friends. And my last point was a congressman that helped me out with my disability some years ago is no longer in office. And when we met at one time for coffee, I'd asked him, I said, would you ever consider running for Senate? And he says, no, and actually, I'm going to get out of office. And I said, why? And he goes, as a Christian, he goes, the corruption is so bad that he goes, if you don't play the game that they want, they will oust you out. He goes, I can't do this.
It's rough, isn't it? That honorable people get involved. And I know, thank God, there are honorable people through our whole political system, but it's a tough game. The moment you step in there, you're going to get blasted. Your family's going to get blasted. You may have to jump through certain hoops and play games and, you know, the good old boy syndrome.
I wish we could just have
Yeah.
I wish we could have debates of positivity and not negativity.
Yeah. Well,
but it'll never happen.
Go back to the Jefferson Adams early on in our history with the earliest presidential races, and they were vicious. And if Jefferson wins, it's the end of America and so on. So it's, and it's not just America, it's human race. But Rich, I totally agree with the sentiments. Thank you for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to David in Richmond, Virginia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah, Dr. Brown. I've been listening to you for a pretty good while now, and I think your tone is wrong about this Republican-Democrat thing. The Republicans, when Trump got elected, the deplorables, really, who elected him, were ecstatic that he got elected. And they were aware that he slipped in under the radar because the Democrats didn't think he had a prayer. The Democrats exploded with rage and vitriol, but that wasn't met with the same rage and vitriol on the part of the deplorables. It wasn't. They didn't act like that. And I think you're just too even-handed about this. You imply that this is that the progressives and the conservatives are equally at fault. I don't agree. I think the Democrats are wicked and satanic, and anybody with a grain of sense can see that.
So let me ask you a question. You know how I voted, correctly?
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. And you know that I have drawn attention to, for example, every Democrat in the Senate voting against Amy Coney Barrett. You're aware of that. I've drawn attention.
I'm not aware of that, but I'm speaking, Dr. Brown, in terms of your tone. I think you cut those people way too much slack. I listened to you yesterday, and someone called in, and an African-American woman who's an evangelical, and again, it was the tone of it. It was as if she... as if you were saying to her, yeah, it's okay to vote Democrat. You know, I don't hold it against you. But
right,
it seems
right
to me that anybody who could vote for a Democrat in this political social environment, if you're a Christian, is nuts. How could you possibly do that?
All right, so here's my question for you, David, and I appreciate this dialogue. I have written very plainly and spoken very plainly about why I cannot, under any circumstance, support voting for a pro-abortion candidate, that I'd rather sit out an election if I didn't have another alternative, but under no circumstances do I see how someone can do that. However, I won't judge their salvation over that. So, I mean, I've been very plain about that for years and years and years, article.
I agree with that, Dr. Brown.
Right, okay. But
I'm not talking about salvation.
But do you think that the Christians that did vote Democrat, who say, look, Reagan didn't change abortion, George H.W. Bush didn't change abortion, George W. Bush didn't change abortion, Donald Trump didn't change abortion. In other words, it's still here, and Roe v. Wade still stands.
All right, I got an answer for that.
So hang on, let me just finish. And they say, look, I'm looking at the justice system that mistreats certain minorities. I'm looking at education system, and I get much better help from my family, from my school, from Democrats than Republicans. So I hate abortion, I hate same-sex marriage, but I'm not voting for those issues. I'm voting for the others. Are you going to say that those people, I should despise them or mock their faith or what?
No, I don't say you despise them,
okay.
But I think you could see that they're using poor judgment. School system is horrible. No matter how much money you throw into it, government schooling is terrible, and everybody knows it. And as far as these minorities who claim that they should get such a bad deal from the police, they don't. You ought to read Heather McDonald or somebody like that talks about how the police are maligned.
Yeah, I've had her on my show. I've had her on my show to talk war on cops. But you should also know that serious studies, meta-analyses, so looking at hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of studies, have analyzed things and have demonstrated that for the same crimes committed with the same background, generally speaking, a black person will serve more time than a white person.
Wait a minute.
Well, David.
If Black Lives Matter really cared about blacks.
David, wait. Do you realize you're deflecting? Do you realize the degree to which you're deflecting? I'm trying to honor you with a serious conversation here about serious issues, sharing many of your perspectives, okay? but you're coming up with these gut level deflections. What you just told me was the those that vote Democratic and think it's going to help the school system, it's not going to do any good because the school systems are messed up. All right. Well, they're saying no matter who I vote for abortion, it doesn't do any good. It doesn't make a difference. We have to change people's hearts. All I'm saying is I'm going to honor my brothers and sisters in the midst of having the dialogue. And you're saying I'm too even-handed about it. So I'm just trying to understand how to approach this. I have openly spoken out against the BLM movement. I've drawn attention to its Marxist-based. I've drawn attention to its witchcraft involvement and its queer theology and or ideology and all of this. You know, at the same time, I recognize that there are excellent, important issues that my black brothers and sisters raised to me that I want to address. So you tell me the best way to do it.
Wait a minute. You have the Democrats who are clearly wicked. I think it's perfectly clear. So how can you vote for people like that? How can you vote for somebody like Biden, you know, who had a couple of same-sex marriages in his office or something of that nature? I mean, how could you support these people?
Well, Trump said that he has no problem with Pete Buttigieg being married. Trump appoints as an ambassador, first person ever on the cabinet, gay cabinet member, Richard Grenell. That's a Trump appointee. Trump has opposed criminalizing homosexuality worldwide, and he said that Caitlyn Jenner, is welcome to use the ladies' room at Trump Tower. So how could you vote for a man like that?
Wait a minute. It's not only more subtle, it's deeper. It's like in this election with Trump, that was a cry of the heart from people who considered it to be deplorable. Said, we got to do something about this. And then we got Trump, a weak read in many respects, I'll agree, but he's the best you got. And so you're going to vote for
Well, we had that. Well, that's why I voted. That's why, of course not.
All right, okay.
Never in a million years would I vote for Biden in these circumstances or for potential Kamala Harris.
All right, listen. Hey, I appreciate you taking my call.
Okay,
right,
can I ask you one more? Can I ask you one more question, David?
Sure.
Okay. Just to understand this, I opposed Trump in the primaries when we had other choices. When he became the candidate, I supported him. I voted for him in 2016. I voted for him in 2020. I've been on endless media, you know, TV, radio, whatever, explaining why, as a follower of Jesus, I could vote for Trump. But would you agree that the Bible says God hates a lying tongue? Would you agree with that?
Okay, fine.
But no, that's high on the list. In other words, there's seven things that God hates. One, you know, shedding of innocent blood is one. Lying tongue is one of the things he really hates. Donald Trump has a lying tongue. I know Christians that couldn't vote for him, so they didn't vote for Biden. They sat out the election or they voted for a third-party candidate because they said he has a lying tongue. How can I support it? Can you respect that or did they miss it?
I can kind of respect it, but I think it's so... I think it has a nicety and exactness to it that's beside the point right now. You can say, well, Trump's had a couple of divorces, right? Well, you can come back and say, well, he hadn't had one in the last 4 years. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, a lying tongue. I mean, Trump may be boorish and verbose and exaggerating and all this sort of thing. But that doesn't cut the core of who you want to have running the United States for the next 4 years.
Right. So given the choice. Given the choice between the two, I voted Donald Trump. As I said on the Mike Huckabee show, to me, it's Trump versus mobocracy, Trump versus socialism, Trump versus the cancel culture. So he got my vote. At the same time, I know he's done a lot of damage, done a lot of good, done a lot of bad, done more for evangelical causes than any president in memory, and done more to hurt the evangelical cause than any president in memory. So, hey, we have an honest discussion. But, David, thank you for calling and sharing your heart. That's why we have live talk radio. My friends, again, have a blessed Thanksgiving. And join me in 15 minutes back on YouTube, Ask Dr. Brown, for our weekly YouTube chat. And, again, David, thank you for the call. I love when people call in and differ with me. Do it every day, please.